This week in KMA Land, local lawmakers discuss dueling property tax reform and water quality at Area Briefings, recent Shenandoah grad killed in fatal car crash, Shenandoah Council backs a project for a Catalyst grant application, reactions are coming in from Trump's comments on E15, Senate lawmakers advanced a pipeline bill, and the Shenandoah Fire Department receives a new pumper truck. I'm Ethan Hewitt filling in for Mike Peterson. Well, local lawmakers in the Iowa House and Senate say a compromise will be needed among three competing property tax proposals being debated in Des Moines. Well, during the first legislative briefing of the year, sponsored by the Shenandoah Chamber and Industry Association, Representative Devin Wood, a Republican from Newmarket, and Senator Tom Shipley, a Republican from Nottoway, outlined proposals put forward by leaders in their respective chambers, along with a third proposal from Governor Kim Reynolds aimed at reducing property taxes statewide. Among other provisions, the Senate proposal would eliminate property taxes for homeowners over the age of 60 who do not carry a mortgage, while the governor's proposal would freeze property taxes for those over 65 with property valuations under $350,000. Shipley says eliminating property taxes altogether for older residents would be difficult.
That's a little bit of a can of worms because they're still going to need services the property taxes provide. Do they get frozen? Well, that's a place to start the discussion, but just to say no more, I think that's a bit of a hard sell, because if you're going up all the time and people are, you know, seniors, you know, older people on fixed incomes and so forth, why, that makes it harder to do so.
Well, the House GOP proposal does not include a specific provision for seniors, but would provide a $25,000 exemption for all residential properties. One element of the House bill that Wood hopes carries forward is a revamp of the property tax mailer sent out each spring during the budgeting process. Well, originally passed 2 years ago, local, county, and school entities are required to send out information detailing their property tax levies for the upcoming fiscal year. Wood says the current mailer misses the mark.
It was a really good idea. We still want to have that mailer that explains what you owe and why, but we really need to clean it up. We've gotten a lot of feedback from our local folks, government entities that have to send it out, and from citizens, and it seems like everybody is saying that it was a good idea, but it's not clear.
At least one local official is pushing back against proposed caps on valuation growth included in the House and governor's plans. The current proposals would cap valuation growth at 2%, excluding new construction. Shenandoah City Administrator A.J. Lyman says the existing 4% cap has already made it difficult for cities to keep up with rising costs.
It has not kept pace with inflation. We have to do more and more every year with less and less, and cut our growth in half. We are going to have to cut services, period. We will have less police, we will have less firefighters, we will have less services for our citizens, we will continue to hemorrhage people.
Another major difference among the proposals involves how the state would handle property tax rollbacks. The House version leaves the rollback in place, while the Senate proposal would phase out rollbacks over a 10-year period for all property except agricultural land. And local lawmakers are also weighing in on how the state can continue to improve water quality in Iowa. Both Wood and Shipley discussed the topic during the first Clarinda legislative briefing of the 2026 Iowa legislative session, sponsored by the Clarinda Chamber of Commerce and Clarinda Economic Development Corporation. Well, the topic has been brought further to the forefront amidst concerns over Iowa's growing cancer rates. Well, Shipley says the state has been investing a significant amount of money in water quality, with some funding shifted to help pay for conservation practices.
Last year, we all know people were concerned about the number of monitors. We didn't reduce funding. We took money that was used in monitors to put them into helping pay for practices that are actually going to do some good. But you know, there's a lot of private monitoring of that water also. And I got a map, and I'm surprised of where some of those monitors are at or how many of them are clustered. Can we unequivocally say that's our problem with cancer? That's the problem with it. We don't know if that's what the case is.
Shipley adds that there should also be stronger incentives for producers to adopt various conservation practices. Wood, who chairs the House Natural Resources Committee, says livestock and pasture operators in particular have little incentive to partake in water quality initiatives.
You're invested in water quality. If you've studied it at all, the best first defense. I'm not saying only option. The best first defense between your city, county, town, whatever your water supplier is, and my row crop field is a pasture livestock guy in between. Why? Because perennial ground cover, those natural root systems, are the best first defense natural filtration system.
Thus, Wood says work is being done to create incentives for producers who choose to maintain pasture land. Both Wood and Shipley noted that more could be done to promote advancements in agricultural technology to help reduce various types of applications and fields.
They also now have a drone to more put directly applied fungicides, which are important. And we're also getting to the point now with big sprayers with 100-foot boom. Some of them now have cameras on them, on the boom. They will only spot spray that weed. So the amount of use of chemicals is going to just drop like a rock. And that's coming. It's already happening in some places.
Wood says she has also been working with Iowa DNR Water Quality Resource Coordinator Adam Schneiders to compile data on nitrate levels in Iowa's waterways over the past several years. On a 2024 Shenandoah graduate was killed in a car accident over this past weekend. Ryan Matheny reports.
Council Bluffs police confirmed Monday that 19-year-old Aaliyah Parker was killed in a crash on Interstate 80 near the Nebraska border around 11:15 Saturday morning. Police say Parker was driving a 2008 Chevrolet Malibu when she lost control and rear-ended a semi-trailer. Authorities say a preliminary investigation indicates driving too fast for road conditions is the apparent cause of the crash. Any witnesses to the crash are urged to call the Council Bluffs Police Traffic Unit at 712-328-4948. A GoFundMe page has been set up by the family to help with expenses. For more information or to donate, we have a link provided at kmaland.com. I'm Ryan Matheny reporting.
And Shenandoah officials have formally thrown their support behind a state grant application to help revitalize an iconic downtown structure. Meeting in regular session Tuesday evening, the Shenandoah City Council unanimously approved selecting Lucas Sheridan's proposal to renovate the former George J's Drug Company building at 612 West Sheridan Avenue for the city's application to the Iowa Economic Development Authority's Community Catalyst Grant Program. Well, the state program provides up to $100,000 in grant money to projects aimed at renovation or demolition of underutilized buildings. Sheridan says he and his partner recently purchased the J Drug building, along with the neighboring former Hallmark store property at 610 West Sheridan. Well, Sheridan says the hope is to bring new life to the venerable structure and restore one of its most iconic features.
We want to reopen the soda shop and bring that back to Shenandoah. We know that's a big staple here. And we also want to convert that space in both buildings, but we want to convert that space into a kind of apothecary craft store. So that's kind of the premise, so you guys kind of get an idea of what we want to do, but what we want to make it is a community meeting ground again. We want to bring back the community from the highway and bring them back to downtown.
Sheridan says the goal is to restore the building to its 1940s appearance, but in talks with contractors and builders, he notes that it will be a significant process.
We don't want to make it look brand new. We want to bring it back to what it looked like in 1940s. But that takes a complete HVAC rehaul, takes complete electrical rehaul. It takes some foundation repair, it takes some tucking. It takes a lot of build out and a lot of mold remedy, and there's a lot of things that go into making that building beautiful again.
Councilman John Eric Brantner thanked all three applicants for expressing interest in helping revitalize the downtown area. Brantner ultimately made the motion to support Sheridan's proposal, noting that the building's historical significance could increase the chances of the grant being awarded.
Request for funds is a higher number. The timeline that was given, I think I would love to see something open by the end of the year. That's part of the reason for that decision. And I'm not saying that you wouldn't have done that either, but as well as just the historical sentiment, I think would, based upon what my understanding of the scoring, I think that adds a little bit more flair to it for potential for approval at their level.
Well, Sheridan says the hope would be to have the buildings up and operational by the end of the calendar year. Without the state funding, he noted it could take a couple more years to complete the necessary renovations. Well, the council's approval also included the required match from the city for the project, up to $50,000, made up of a $40,000 loan from the city's revolving loan fund and in-kind contributions. Still to come on This Week in KMA Land, reactions are coming in from President Donald Trump's comments on E15. Welcome back to This Week in KMA Land. Well, President Donald Trump says Congress is very close to reaching a deal on year-round E15 legislation. Well, during a speech at the Horizon Event Center in Clive on Tuesday, Trump touched on legislation that would allow higher blends of ethanol on fuels to be sold year-round, which in turn would drive higher demand for corn. Well, last week, a bipartisan year-round E15 provision was dropped from a congressional funding bill. Trump told the crowd he would swiftly sign E15 legislation if it reaches his desk.
I am trusting Speaker Mike Johnson, who's great, and Leader John Thune, who's great, that's House and Senate, to find a deal that works, we've got it, for farmers, consumers, and refiners, including small and mid-sized refiners. In other words, to get E15 approved, and they're working on it. They're very close to getting it done, so I just wanted to let you know that. Yeah.
While year-round sales are allowed in 8 Midwestern states through an Environmental Protection Agency waiver, sales of the higher ethanol-blended fuels are not allowed in the majority of states between June 1st and September 15th. Speaking on KMA's Morning Line program Thursday morning, Iowa Renewable Fuels Association Executive Director Monty Shaw says the president's comments were reassuring, particularly after that E15 provision was dropped from the congressional funding bill.
And there were just too many bumps in the congressional process, and it got thrown out of the packages that they were passing. And so, you know, we were pretty bummed at that point. That was kind of our shot to get this done. And so now with the president saying, hey, you know, he talked about Speaker Johnson, he talked about Senate Majority Leader Thune by name, and said, hey, I'm counting on these guys to get this done. We think that sends a very strong signal.
Rather than passing legislation, Congress established an E15 Rural Domestic Energy Council to focus on ethanol policy with a February 15th deadline for submitting legislative proposals. Well, Shaw noted that the potential deal in the recent funding bill had also received support from the American Petroleum Institute. Well, the Shenandoah native says disagreements on E15 legislation for several years have had nothing to do with the higher ethanol blended fuels themselves.
They're arguing over, well, what does the oil industry get in return? No one's raising objections or questions about, you know, why we would want to get rid of this unjustified and outdated restriction on year-round E15. It's just more or less the price we have to pay for it. So with the president now saying, hey, get this done, I'm hopeful that that will make people be a little more reasonable. You can kind of see a path forward now.
Well, a recent study from Decision Innovation Solutions indicated that year-round E15 sales would be a more short-term way to address a growing demand gap for Iowa corn producers. And lawmakers in the Iowa Senate have advanced a bill attempting to serve as a compromise on eminent domain and pipelines. By a 2-1 vote Thursday, an Iowa Senate Commerce Subcommittee advanced Senate File 2067, which Senate Majority Leader Mike Klemisch introduced as a way to address concerns of landowners who don't want a pipeline crossing their land, while ensuring efforts like a proposed carbon sequestration project can move forward. While much of the discussion around eminent domain and pipelines has focused on carbon sequestration, Klemisch's bill addresses all types of hazardous liquid pipelines. Primarily, the legislation would expand the pipeline corridor, allowing companies to seek voluntary land use agreements within 5 miles of either side of a proposed pipeline or anywhere in a county where the pipeline company held an informational meeting. While the bill still allows the use of eminent domain, Klemisch emphasized that companies must provide the Iowa Utilities Commission with evidence that they could not find a route to landowners who don't want the pipeline on their land.
I've been saying this from day one. The way the bill is structured is prior to them even going to request the authority to utilize eminent domain, they have to prove to the IUC that they've exhausted all potential voluntary easement parcels in the corridor. I've heard some stuff in the chamber today or in the hearing today This does not expand. This bill does not expand the number of folks in the state of Iowa that would be impacted by eminent domain. Actually, it does the other thing.
Democratic State Senator Janet Peterson was the lone no vote on advancing the legislation. In addition to feeling the bill was lopsided toward corporations over landowners and citizens, Peterson also took issue with a provision that allows the use of eminent domain.
One of the reasons why they might be able to go ahead with taking over the land deals with economic infeasibility, but that's not defined. I mean, I know pipelines are expensive. Who's going to be calling the shots on what's economically feasible and not? So I fail to see where the compromise here is in this legislation.
Well, the subcommittee's advancement of the legislation also came after hearing testimony from several landowners in opposition and groups in support of the bill. Cynthia Hansen, a farmer from Shelby County, says the bill would expose more landowners to the possibility of eminent domain.
This bill opens up a larger pool of landowners for the companies to choose from, but it does nothing to protect unwilling landowners from the threat of or the use of eminent domain. The timeline limits in this bill that landowners are given are not realistic. New landowners need time to understand the pros and cons of this pipeline and to schedule an appointment with an attorney to get these easements read and interpreted before making a lifelong decision.
Well, Colin Gorton is with the Iowa Renewable Fuels Association, one of multiple groups registered in support of the bill. Gorton says that while the legislation isn't perfect, they support provisions allowing companies to hold meetings to share general project details and to expand the voluntary easement corridor.
We expect that expanding the corridor will nearly eliminate the use of eminent domain when building a project like this, although there are, of course, unavoidable situations when you're building any kind of multi-state or linear infrastructure project. These two provisions will dramatically reduce even the thought of eminent domain by allowing companies to draw a more thoughtful route on the front end, with a wider corridor providing further flexibility once the route is determined.
State Senator Mike Busolo, who also chairs the Senate Commerce Committee, says he supported the legislation due to it covering all types of pipeline projects, adding that as part of the legislative process, there will likely still be more work done on the bill as the legislation now heads to the Senate Commerce Committee before it can go to the full Senate floor. And after a roughly three-year process, the Shenandoah Fire Department has received a new apparatus to primarily assist in fighting rural fires. Well, the fire department posted on its Facebook page this week that it had brought its new 2,000-gallon Toyne pumper truck to the station after completing its final inspections. Well, the new pumper will primarily combat fires outside the city limits and in the surrounding townships, replacing an older pumper the department has used for more than 20 years. Shenandoah Fire Chief Justin Marshall tells KMA News that the truck was ordered in late 2023, with planning and finance work for the apparatus dating back to the late 2022. Marshall says a good portion of the funding for the new pumper came from the sale of a tanker that the department was underutilizing to another fire department in Texas.
There were departments out there that were wanting trucks that were good, clean, used trucks because they couldn't find commercial chassis. And so we actually brokered it with a company that's all they do. And when it was all said and done and we paid off a little bit was owed on that one, it was a substantial gain. So between that and a sale of an old military truck that we used in the rural side, didn't pay for all this truck we did, but it was a very, very good down payment for it.
Marshall says funding from the various townships' levies for fire protection will help pay off the remainder of the money still owed on the new pumper. And while the new apparatus will also be able to transport a driver and four other firefighters, Marshall says the significant upgrades are a larger pump and an extra 1,000 gallons of water capacity.
Our goal into that was to have that extra 1,000 gallons to maybe enhance knockdown in a rural situation, because in that scenario you're already behind the eight ball with just a sure distance of getting there, and also you don't have a hydrant in every block. You've got water on wheels, so we'll still roll 3,000 gallons behind it like we always have, but there won't be the need for the guys just to wait on water necessary.
Well, while the truck is on site and has completed the required inspections, Marshall says the vehicle hasn't entered service just yet because they are still awaiting delivery on much of the equipment for the rig. Once the new pumper is put into service, Marshall says the older pumper will become a reserve vehicle for both rural and city operations. Well, that wraps up this week in KMA Land. Be listening each week at this time for This Week in KMA Land. And for more information all the time, log on to KMALand.com, where you can also hear this program in its entirety. For the entire KMA News team, this is Ethan Hewitt, and have a great weekend. This Week in KMA Land, a presentation of KMA News, keeping the region informed for 100 years.